Coming up on today's show,
the Super Bowl matchup is set. Andy Reid versus Kyle Shanahan. Drink. We'll see you in South Beach. Plus, Joe is in Mexico, Garrett to NYC, and Philip Rivers is leaving state income tax behind forever.
All this and much, much more coming up on another award-winning episode of The Tomahawk Show.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Tomahawk Show. I am Andrew Hawkins, your weekly co-host. You hear me every time we do an episode because it's my show. I'm the Hawk portion, joined by my friend Joe Thomas, one of the best football players in the history of the sport. Joe is currently in Mexico. Joe, are you okay?
There is a rumor that I have been kidnapped.
Okay.
NFD, a la FADnet.
Mm.
There's a good chance that I've been kidnapped, but the good news is they left me enough Corona Light to survive for at least 2 months.
Okay.
So I've made sure to at least knock off a few of those, and hopefully you'll be able to come down here and rescue me ASAP before the Super Bowl, because there are so many Cleveland Browns that are going to be competing in the Super Bowl that I have got to go see it in person.
You're right, and it's really nice of your kidnappers to let you podcast or give you still a cell phone to use. Because typically they don't do that. So if you want to interact with the show, hit us up on social media at Tomahawk Show on Reddit, Twitter, Instagram. Hit our Facebook group, Tomahawk, or call our voicemail line 440-628-1376. It is Conference Championship Sunday, so we are recapping all those games today.
Mm-hmm.
Check us out on YouTube at Uninterrupted's YouTube page. Yeah, we're going to get right into this, man. There's only two games that we're on today. We are recording right after the Packers and San Fran game, so we have not heard Richard Sherman talk any shit. If he has, he hasn't come to the podium yet, and we know it's coming. I'm excited for it, but we are recording this podcast pre those headlines. Speaking of headlines, let's get right into it, Joe. Tom of headlines. Drop it.
This is a special report from
Tom of Headlines.
All right, the Kansas City Chiefs beat the Tennessee Titans, as we predicted here on the Tomahawk Show. Joe, did anything from this game stand out to you?
I will say that the only thing that stood out to me is exactly what we predicted last week. What did we say, right?
Yeah.
If the Tennessee Titans are going to win this football game, it's got to be on the back of that offensive line and Derrick Henry. And Ryan Tannehill needs to throw for about 74 yards on 7 attempts. And that's how they win the football game. They need to play small ball. They need to squeeze the football. They need to keep the possessions low. That's how you win the game. As soon as Ryan Tannehill's throwing for 150, 250 yards, it's over. They got no chance, and that's exactly what happened. You can't win like that. Ryan Tannehill's played like a pretty good quarterback. You got to give him the credit. He's done a nice job down the stretch. But the best thing that the Titans have done, especially in this playoff run, is play great defense. Run the football, keep the ball out of Ryan Tannehill's hands, and more importantly, keep the football out of the other team's hands. Unfortunately, when you're playing the Kansas City Chiefs and you've got a generational talent like Patrick Mahomes, you can't give him the football because he's going to go down and score. It doesn't matter what the score is. Doesn't matter how much they're behind. He's going to get the ball, and he's going to do magic things, and that's exactly what we saw here today.
Yeah, man. I mean, they even started the game really well. They were eating up clock. They were running the football like we've seen them do so many times throughout this playoffs, but we just knew the Chiefs' offense was too good, and it was more that today. You talked about Patrick Mahomes. He just did his usual thing. Predicted here first on the Tomahawk Show by Cliff Kingsbury that Patrick Mahomes would be the highest-paid NFL football player ever when it's all said and done, before he had even taken a snap. So if you're a Tomahawkian, you knew this information way early. My question for you, Joe, is this. Is Patrick Mahomes now QB1 in the NFL?
Well, I'm not ready to go out on that limb and say he is absolutely the number one quarterback in the NFL. Certainly he's playing like it right now, but when I talk about the greatest quarterback in the NFL, I want a little bit longer of a shelf life where you can look back and you say, you know what, for the last 5 years, he's played lights out, and he's only been in the league a few years, so he hasn't really done anything to say he's not QB number one, but just the fact that he's only been around for a few years says that, you know what, there's other guys out there right now that have more of a track record, that have been doing it for a longer period of time, that you've got to give them the credit, because I say it all the time, but the number one disease in the NFL is that we remember what happened last week the most. And we put the most stock into how well you were in the last game, how well you played in the last game. And yes, Patrick Mahomes is playing unbelievable football. He's got incredible weapons. He's got Andy Reid, who right now is the best played developer in the NFL. But you got to still, when you got to still step back and say, okay, he's playing great football. He's unbelievable. But there are other guys that might be more deserving because they've got a longer track record.
Yeah, I understand that. I just think, like, physically, and we talked about Russell Wilson last week, and I'm still a big fan of Russ, and I think he actually is, for me, QB1 in this league. I had Mahomes, I think, 3 behind Aaron Rodgers, and I think he leapfrogged him today for me. Just because, I mean, with everything on the line, we've seen him in these big moments. We've seen him last year in the AFC Championship, and they lost to the Patriots, but it wasn't – he did everything he was supposed to do. Like, when he had to go down there and score late in the game – he did that. Today, you could just watch the game even when they were down and you just knew it didn't matter. He was going to be able to take them down and score at will whenever he wanted to or whenever he needed to, which for me is what I'm most excited to see in the Super Bowl. When the stakes are the highest, what do you do? Because if he wins that game and he comes away with like a similar feel that we've seen in all the other games where he just takes them over, a lot of people are going to be having that conversation. I'm sad about this, Joe. Travis Kelce, who has joined us on our Super Bowl Tomahawk set for 2 years in a row now since we've been doing it, won't be there for us this year because he'll be playing in the Super Bowl. So, you know, he's always been a highlight. That sucks. But maybe we can get the Kelce family style parade speeches that become so famous in the Kelce family.
I was going to say, you know, the Tomahawk Super Bowl shows, they were kind of what launched the podcast. They were pretty much the most popular shows that we did every year. We always stole the show on Radio Row. We're definitely going to do that again this year, as I think we've teased it a little bit. There's been a lot of networks that put in some million-dollar bids to be able to have us for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. NFL Network, it seems like they're probably going to steal us for a couple of days. So we're going to be on the NFL Network set doing our thing. Probably not going to get Travis Kelce, but you know what? They do. They still do a lot of TV. They do a lot of radio during the week of the Super Bowl. They might not be as accessible as we're used to. However, I still have a feeling we're going to be able to get our man Travis because he is the number one Tomahawk member. I know there's a lot of guys out there that want to say that they're number one on the Tomahawk, but honestly, Travis listens every single week. He's an enormous fan. And I gotta believe that he's going to find time, even in his busy Super Bowl prep week, to be able to come out and talk to us.
I couldn't agree more, man. What does this mean, this loss, mean for Mike Vrabel's penis, Joe? Dillywhacker. Wee-wee.
Well, it's very happy right now. It's definitely standing at attention. The Dillywhacker is standing at attention.
Yeah, it's happy.
I'm not sure if his wife is happy about that or sad about that. But I got to think that he is feeling extremely fired up that he gets to keep his weenie for at least one more season. He doesn't have to cut it off in order to get that coveted Super Bowl ring that he already has multiple of. So go figure. But Mike Vrabel's wee-wee is safe for one more season.
Thank goodness, because that's all we were worried about here in the Tomahawk Show. Is this finally Andy Reid's moment, Joe? Is Andy Reid finally going to get his Super Bowl win and join the ranks of the Sean Paytons, the Bill Belichicks, and all these great recent coaches who have won for a consistent amount of time, but he doesn't have a ring?
Well, let me break it down for you. This is the first time that I can remember since I got in the NFL in 2007 where I was watching AFC, NFC championship games, and I didn't have a hardcore cheering interest because I liked all four of those teams. There's a ton of connections between you and I and all the guys that are playing this weekend.
Uh-huh.
And for me, like, if Andy Reid wins, I'm so happy for him because, as we talked about on the last episode, he's in both of our top fives. He's one of the best coaches in NFL history. He just needs to be able to get through and win that Super Bowl, and then he's going to be able to cement himself truly as potentially a Hall of Fame coach. And the fact that he's going to be able to get there and has a great opportunity with a great team and a young Patrick Mahomes, who's also kind of setting his course for greatness right now as quarterback, is really exciting. But at the same time, like both you and I have big histories with a lot of the guys in the Titans, a lot of the coaches, Mike Vrabel. Both you and I have played against him or played with him. So we had, obviously, if he would have been there, we'd have had a huge cheering interest there. But as you know, Mike Shanahan, Kyle Shanahan drink. We were big fans of that whole family tree. And, of course, Matt LaFleur. I was the first guy in the national media to say that Matt LaFleur would be a great fit for the Packers. He's from the Kyle Shanahan drink scheme as well. So, really, the Tomahawk Show could not have been wrong, whoever won this weekend. And so it was really fun for me to watch and just cheer whoever the victor was. And in both of those games, by the middle of the fourth quarter, it was pretty clear who was going to win. So it felt pretty good as I was sucking down my 35th Corona Light of the day in Mexico on the beach. I could cheer happily and not have any stress whatsoever down the stretch.
Well, it's perfect because if you were playing the Tomahawk drinking game today and you watched the NFC Championship game, and if you're playing now, you better go get a refill because you're about to get hammered. The 49ers beat the Packers. They went up 27-0 at halftime. Kyle Shanahan drinks offense was rolling, running literally down the throats of the Green Bay Packers. They end up winning that game 34-20, Joe. Am I wrong? 37-20, I believe, is the final. We're checking with the researchers. I've already started the Tomahawk drinking game, if you couldn't tell. Yes, indeed, 37-20. The 49ers won. Joe, you predicted the Packers would win. You were wrong. But you're never wrong because you're connected to me, and I'm always right. What was your biggest takeaway of this football game?
Well, it was just surprising that Mike Pettine's Green Bay Packers defense didn't have a better plan to be able to stop the running game. We kind of thought that, being that Mike Pettine was the head coach in Cleveland when we were there and Kyle Shanahan was offensive coordinator, we thought that Mike would have a little bit of a better plan to be able to shut down the running game. Like, the passing game is what it is. When you have a quarterback that's precise and is able to throw the ball in tight windows, like, whatever your scheme is on defense, it can be a little bit difficult to shut something like that down. But from a running game standpoint, like, scheme is huge on defense to be able to stop that. And I really definitely thought that Mike Pettine was going to be able to come up with something that would be creative to at least force the 49ers to throw the football more and kind of get out a lot of their running game schemes. But because the score got a little bit sideways early on, Pettine and his Green Bay Packers defense was behind. The 49ers were able to kind of open up their playbook and run everything they had from a running game scheme standpoint. And good old Raheem Mostert, former Cleveland Brown. Did you play with him? I actually don't remember, but I remember playing with him myself. Went absolutely bananas. And this is not trying to be disparaging at all to Raheem, but he's not one of the top five running backs in the NFL. But it just proves that the great scheme that Kyle Shanahan drink puts together and the way that he coordinates the receivers, the tight ends, the line, the running back, and even the quarterback, where everybody buys into what they're trying to run, and everybody buys into the details of each single play, is what means the difference between maybe a 0-yard run and a 5 or 6-yard run.
Yep.
And if you're able to keep calling those plays over and over again because they're successful, it just turns into an absolute shit show when you're on defense and you're giving up 200, 220 yards rushing. Because you can't stop them. You don't know what you're trying to do. You're trying to widen your guys on the front. You're trying to blitz guys. But everything you do, it's like you're a step late.
Right.
As soon as the offense runs a play, as soon as Kyle Shanahan is successful in a play, you try to move your defense. You try to move your defense to be able to stop them. But they've already gone to the counter to that counter. And so it's like whenever you try to widen your guys out, you try to move them, you try to adjust. They've already adjusted and run the counter to be able to take advantage of the adjustment that you made. So you got to say, Kyle Shanahan, drink, what an unbelievably savvy, incredibly foresighted game plan that he put together in that running scheme to be able to allow the 49ers to absolutely run Green Bay Packers out of their stadium.
So a couple things. Number one, the Browns should have just given over like all the reins to Kyle Shanahan after the 2014 season. They should have just said, you're the head coach, you're the GM, and just take it. And if they would have asked the players, everybody would have said, yep, we're good with that.
Yeah. Unfortunately,
Yeah, 7-9 does not exactly give the confidence that an owner needs to just blow everything up and give the reins to the offensive coordinator.
But I will say a lot of the changes that were made late in the season were not Kyle's, and they all went catastrophically wrong, which is what was, I'm no sure, doubt. Was a part of the 138-page PowerPoint or whatever it was that he presented to the coaching staff. Regardless of that, though, I got to give a shout-out to Mike McDaniel, because we were the first people literally in the country talking about Mike McDaniel as the next great coordinator. And for the run game coordinator, there's not a place where that matters more than the San Francisco 49ers and the display that they put on today. That's number one. Number two, there is only two teams in the NFL that whose running scheme in every play takes all 11 guys on the field are participating, and that is the 49ers and the Tennessee Titans. And that's the reason why they're doing so well. The Titans, because they know Derrick Henry can take it 80 yards at 6'4", 250 pounds. And so they're always ready for the big play. For the 49ers, it's because just as much as they work on their routes and their timing there, they devote just as much time, energy, and teaching in the run game and how the receivers are supposed to block, which angle, which guy, what's the timing, because they craft every single run for touchdowns. That's what makes the difference of a great running game and just a good running game.
Well, that's the difference. And I've played in 9 offensive schemes. I had 9 offensive coordinators in 11 years. Mm-hmm. And the difference between schemes and why we always talked about Kyle Shanahan and his scheme being so fantastic and how it's different, Drink, is because it meshes perfectly with his passing game. The run matches perfectly with the play action, mm-hmm. matches perfectly with the drop back. Everything works together. It's not just random plays that are coming together on your call sheet and it's like, okay, we're in the shotgun, it's going to be a pass. We're under center, it's going to be some basic inside run. Like, everything looks the same from the start of the play until the ball gets either handed off or it gets thrown. And that's what makes it so difficult on the defense. And that's why when things get rolling, that's when they're at their best.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember playing against the Houston Texans in, I don't know, maybe the middle of my career. I can't remember exactly the time, but we got behind and Gary Kubiak was running that offense and our defense was getting absolutely gashed one play after the next because every play started out looking exactly the same. And once you get behind on it as a defense, you're just like mindlessly looking at your gap and trying to follow your discipline and your rules. And as you're sprinting to the sideline, trying to read what your offensive lineman is doing, you have a running back running past you 20 yards down the field. And then the very next play, you're sprinting to the sideline, trying to read whatever your key is. And all of a sudden the quarterback pulls the football and he stands back there and he's throwing a lockdown route 35 yards down the field to the running back. Mm. Or he's throwing a takeoff route, and it's a 50-yard touchdown pass. Like, all those routes, all those plays, they look the same because they match perfectly from the start to the finish. And that's not something that you can say about most NFL plays. Most NFL schemes that you talk about from an offensive coordinator standpoint, it starts out, and from the very beginning, once the ball is snapped, even before the ball is snapped, from the pre-snap read, you know it's either going to be a pass or it's going to be a run. And so as a defensive player, you can kind of cut half about the things that you are expecting right off the bat based on the formation, based on the motion, based on the shift, and if the quarterback's in gun or if he's under center. And you can never do that in Kyle Shanahan drink offense.
Right, right. No, exactly. And you know what? I knew Shanahan was going to kick Pettin's ass. Let's just call it what it is. And why he did it in the first game as well is because I remember we would practice against the defense, and it was a weird, and we've actually talked about this before. It was weird as an offense going against our defense in that season because, and the other seasons that Pettin was there, because their defense, they would game plan the offense for practice. So we weren't worried about, like, especially in camp in the offseason, it didn't seem like as much building towards when the season came around. They would script the practice to beat just the offense. So they weren't working on opponents and what they'll use in a season. They were game planning our specific offense, right? Which didn't make sense because you know what we're running, essentially. And I remember Shanahan and the offensive coaches would say, If we played them in a game, we would kick their ass. But the difference is we're getting ready for the season. We're not getting ready for tomorrow's practice because we don't play our defense. They would say it all the time because it would piss them off. Because we would throw interceptions or get stuffed. And the defense at practice would celebrate like we won a game. And the offense is like, dude, we're trying, like, you're not helping the team. That you're not helping our offense get better. Why are you celebrating? You just won practice. Like, that's not going to help us. So now fast forward to now, where Shanahan knows that defense, again, almost as well as the guys calling the defense. They knew exactly how to game plan a Mike Pettine defense. And it was probably a lot of pent-up aggression from those days where they would celebrate in their face at practice in front of fans in camp for trying to kick their ass in times when it didn't matter.
I got to be honest. I got to ask you this. Were you the one that found that amazing video of Mike Pettine and Kyle Shanahan on the sidelines when they were both giving each other the stink eye when they were on the same staff? Because I don't know if the Tomahawk retweeted it at Tomahawk Show on Twitter or what, but I looked at that video and it made me laugh so much because I remember those guys, they got along pretty well, but there were times, especially in training camp, when we were trying to get ready for the season and the defense was trying to win the practice, where we would get so frustrated as an offense, and Kyle Shanahan drink would get so upset because he was like, I just need you guys to act honest.
Yeah.
Because we're trying to get this look that we're trying to work on this concept. And because you guys are so focused on winning the practice and you've gone ahead and looked at their script and
come
up with the perfect defense and the corner blitz that blows up this outside zone. Like, yeah, we get it. If you know we're running, you're going to
really
be able to
defense.
Call the perfect defense and it's going to blow it up. But if you don't know what we're running, like, we just need an honest look from the defense. Like, that's what we want in order to improve, in order to get better. And we didn't always get that. And so I feel like there was definitely some pent-up anger that you just said with Kyle going against Patton's defense.
Absolutely, man. Those practices would be so frustrating because you're right. They would see the script and call, like, corner blitzes in plays, like, in reverses. We'd have a reverse run in the script, and all of a sudden, oh, you picked the perfect play to run a corner blitz and a safety and all-out pressure on a reverse. Like, genius. I wonder how you scripted that. Ridiculous. All right, well, is this it for the Packers? Are they going to get another chance to get to the Super Bowl, or is that window closing? Aaron Rodgers is 36. You know, some of that O-line is going to start becoming up for free agency, and I don't know. You tell me, Joe. You're the Wisconsin expert.
Yeah. Make sure that John, the great producer of the Tomahawk Show, cuts this one up because I'm making a bold prediction right now that the Packers have a 3-year window. I'm saying that until Aaron Rodgers turns 40, they've got a great opportunity where Aaron Rodgers is still in his prime to be able to get that Super Bowl, get a couple Super Bowls maybe in there. And I think Matt LaFleur, being the great coach, great offensive coordinator that he is already, he's got an opportunity to improve because he is young. This is his first year as a head coach. He's got a lot of things that he can learn from this season, and he's only going to get better moving forward. Mm. The relationship and the partnership between him and Aaron Rodgers is only going to get better. So I think that the next 3 years is when the Packers are going to be their most dangerous. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're here a few more times and if they get a couple Super Bowl berths in the next 3 years.
All right, well, let's get right to Super Bowl predictions, man. Who do you got? You got an early prediction. You can change it. We have 2 weeks until the big game, so feel free to backpedal anytime before the snap. Hell, backpedal after the game. You know we don't care. So we got the Chiefs versus the 49ers. Who are you picking? Who does your gut tell you is going to come away the winners of Super Bowl 54 in South Beach?
Oh, man, I'm not going to lie. Right? This is a week. I'm here in Mexico. I've got all the kids, right? It's a little stressful when you got all these little kids around the pool. And, you know, after the kids go to bed, you got to crush a case of Corona Lights and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, to kind of ease the stress, ease the tension. But next week, I am so excited. Like, the Super Bowl in Miami is honestly the best possible matchup that I could possibly predict. 49ers, Chiefs, two teams that I love, two teams that have all sorts of connections between you and I. I'm actually going to the game. This will be my first Super Bowl in my entire life that I'm going to be sitting in the seats.
Wow.
I'm going to be watching the game. I've got a ton of friends. Both you and I are making the big time. We've gotten hired by our NFL Network employees.
employers. They're taking us there, man. We're going to be working the whole week. We're going to be doing Tomahawk Show from Radio Row on NFL Network. It's unbelievable. I mean, truly, when I think about like the pinnacle of my career, it's going to be this year in Miami. It's going to be much fun. I love it. We're going to get exclusive access to all the coaches and players.
So you're not ready to make a prediction yet?
I'm ready to make a prediction, and I'm just building it up.
Oh, okay, this is a fucking long build up.
We have exclusive access to all the players on both teams, all the coaches with our history with all those guys. We've got the old Andy Reid, the guy that loves fast food Fridays, versus the young, the skinny Kyle Shanahan. The man has eaten a fat. He hasn't eaten a protein in nearly his entire life. He survives on nothing but asparagus and Brussels sprouts and maybe a salad with a light ranch dressing occasionally. This is the ultimate contrast in the offense that just wants to throw the football, that wants to do Star Wars passing concepts versus Kyle Shanahan's, all I want to do is run the football. It's unbelievable. It's so exciting. And I'm going to be sitting there in the seats, and I'm going to watch the Kansas City Chiefs win 35-31 in one of the most epic Super Bowls of all time. I cannot wait. It is so exciting right now. I want to fly back from Mexico today after I finish another couple Corona Lights and to be able to start sitting there next to my man Hawk enjoying the build-up to the great game.
I love it. So what we're going to do on the Tomahawk Twitter, we're going to tweet out all the members of all the former Browns players who are playing in the Super Bowl in this game. It's become kind of a ritual that we always talk about. We're going to make it official on social media, get some cheap retweets, and anger a lot of people. So you got the Chiefs winning. All right, so you got Patrick Mahomes walking away with his first Super Bowl win. Andy Reid, first Super Bowl win. Travis Kelce is now going to be not only the best tight end in NFL history, a Super Bowl winner joining the Tomahawk Show. All right, I like it. I like that prediction. I'm not ready to make my prediction yet. I'm going to hold off. I'm going to hold off, Joe, because it's our show. We do what we want. This winter, start a new routine to upgrade your everyday life with a monthly box of awesome from Bespoke Post.
Bespoke Post sends Hawk and I only the best stuff every month. So whether you're looking to commemorate an occasion with a champagne saver or toast perfectly aged winter cocktails, Box of Awesome has got you covered. From style and grooming goods to barware, cooking tools, and outdoor gear, Box of Awesome has carefully built collections for every part of your life. In my first box, I got the Forge knife because it is absolutely amazing. And who doesn't love an amazing knife? It's Damascus steel. It's beautiful, it's tough, and it's sharp as hell.
In my first box, I got the Weekender bag because, as you know, I travel constantly. It was one of their most popular items, and I needed something that was durable and stylish and great for all the trips that I'm making for business and pleasure. To get started, take the quiz at boxofawesome.com. Your answers will help them pick the right box of awesome for you. They release new boxes every month across a ton of different categories. It's free to sign up, and you can skip a month or cancel at any time. Each box costs only $45, but has over $70 worth of gear inside.
Get 20% off your first monthly box when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and enter the code Tomahawk at checkout. That's boxofawesome.com, code Tomahawk with a TH for 20% off your first box.
Two out of three guys will experience some form of male pattern baldness by the time they're 35. The good news? With today's advancements in science, Keeps offers proven treatments that can combat the symptoms of hair loss.
Keeps has revolutionized the way men are treated for hair loss. You used to have to go to the doctor's office for your hair loss prescription. Now, thanks to Keeps, you can visit a doctor online and get medication delivered to your home. No more waiting rooms and no more pharmacy checkout lines. Get the attention and service you need, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home.
Keeps treatments are up to 90% effective at reducing and stopping further hair loss. The sooner you start using Keeps, the more hair you'll save. So act fast. Find out why Keeps has more 5-star reviews than any of its competitors, and nearly 100,000 men trust Keeps for their hair loss prevention medication.
Keeps treatment starts at just $10 a month. Plus, for a limited time, you can get your first month free. If you're ready to take action and prevent hair loss, go to keeps.com/tomahawk to receive your first month of treatment for free. That's keeps.com/tomahawk. We're going to let you get back to your vacation and your drooling kids who are peeing and throwing up on stuff. But before that, I'm going to force you to do Am I Tripping? genius. If we do the drop, he can't leave.
Oh my God!
It's a.
By the way, can I just say that our amazing Emmy Award winning, Oscar winning, sound guy Chris,
yeah,
has put together the greatest drop in the history of podcasts with that MI Trippin.
Oh yeah!
I have never been in a bad mood or the wrong place after I hear that MI Trippin drop. Yeah. I always am happy. I mean, let's be honest. You drink a case of Coors Light or yeah. Corona Light, whatever this thing is, you're going to be happy no matter what. But that put me in the right spot.
I'm in the right spot.
Really good right now.
All right, the Tomahawk drinking game is definitely affecting Joe, so we better hurry up, John. What's the first one?
Three quick ones. First one, Philip Rivers told Adam Schefter that he sold his house in San Diego and moved to Florida. Rivers told Schefter in a text, quote, "What this means football-wise is to be determined. But it was time for us to move back closer to home." Rivers from North Carolina. Guys, am I tripping, or has Philip Rivers played his last game as a Charger?
I'll go first. Yes, he's played his last game as a Charger, and he's clearly setting up to be the quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's why he moved to Florida. Boom. Problem. Case solved. You heard it here first on the Tomahawk Show. Joe, what do you get?
This is the easiest am I tripping question of all time, because Philip Rivers didn't even sell his house when the team moved from San Diego to L.A. He bought like a $500,000 bus, fitted it out with a sound system, a TV that's bigger than anything I have in my house. Not the Hawks' house, because his house is worth like $100 million over there in the Hollywood Hills. But
that's the guest house.
He sold his house right now. When he didn't sell it when they moved from San Diego to L.A., this is easy. It's over. There's no way you move 45 children from California to Florida unless yeah. you're completely done with everything that's going on in L.A. He's done in L.A. They're going to find Tom Brady. He's going to be the quarterback of the L.A. Chargers.
That is so true.
You can
true.
Count on that. ASAP.
It is the worst. I have three kids, and it is hell flying with them. He has nine. Unless he never wants them to ever come see him ever again, there's no way he's a Charger. That's such a good point, Joe. You know how much it costs to fly with nine kids plus you and your wife? That's 11.
You can't even buy
tickets.
A regular.
That's the entire first class.
Let's just be honest. Okay.
You have to get the first class
Philip Rivers
every commercial
made enough
flight.
Money to fly private.
You think he flies private?
Philip Rivers is richer than even Andrew Hawkins.
Oh, wow.
He's that's got cool. enough money. He does not see the inside of an airport. He flies private, but even flying private, you can't buy a regular medium jet. You're not flying in the regular Hawker jet right. with nine kids. You got to go with like the Donald Trump Air Force One.
Yeah.
Like, you can't. There's not a lot of jets that have 11 or 12 seats in them. So even if he was trying to fly private as cheap as possible, he's going to have to go with like the largest size Andrew Hawkins jet that's going to be like $250,000 to fly from Florida to California. That ain't happening, man. He is done as L.A. Charger.
And I don't think he's that rich. Let me put that out there. He's made a lot of money, but him making a lot of money and Tom Brady making a lot of money are different. Tom Brady has two children. He has nine kids. That automatically cuts your net worth divided by nine. So that's not like he's making a working salary, paying for nine people to live for 18 years and then plus. He's not cutting them off at 18, Joe.
Tom Brady also has two salaries. And we're not talking about two teacher salaries here making $35,000 a year. Right. We're talking about Gisele Bündchen making $35 million a year. Gisele has absolutely dwarfed Tom Brady's earnings for the last 15 years since they've been married.
That's crazy.
Made it at least double whatever he's made, because he's always taking a discount. But even his discount is like $15, $20 million a year, where she's making $35, $40 million a year. So
that's wild.
Their combined net worth is over $500 million. So they ain't flying anywhere commercial for absolutely sure. But
yeah,
Philip Rivers, if he flies those nine kids, I still think he's flying private, but you're not flying a regular private jet with 47 children.
Yeah, they must not fly a lot.
My mistake, guys. Phil Rivers is actually from Alabama. He went to school in North Carolina.
Okay.
You think he starts for the Jags next year? I was thinking Panthers. Joe, do you have a prediction for where Phil Rivers might end up next year?
To me, it makes more sense that he would end up in the Jaguars, because Doug Marrone is still the coach there. He's a guy that's going to be ultra desperate to like get somebody in there who can win. That's kind of been the Jaguars' mantra. I know they just fired Tom Coughlin, but they're going to be still looking for a quarterback that can come in and help them kind of succeed immediately, because they don't have an opportunity to bring in a young guy and bring him along and have a few bad seasons. Whereas Matt Rhule in Carolina, he's got time, right? I feel like they're going to draft a quarterback and try to develop a young guy, because they got plenty of time on that staff. They don't have to win right now. He's got a long-term coaching deal. He doesn't need to bring in anybody, and he's got no pressure to win right now. So I definitely think they go rookie, whereas Jacksonville goes Phillip Rivers. They go old, they go win now.
Jason Garrett has been hired as the offensive coordinator for the New York Giants. Oh. As a lifelong Giants fan, I find this upsetting. Am I tripping, or is Jason Garrett to the New York Giants a terrible hire?
I'm a little bit surprised by it. I know that Hawk is a big fan of Coach Judge over there. I know he went from the TV court circuit right to the NFL game, and so it's a big jump there.
It's Judge Joe Brown, Joe. But continue.
Oh, sorry. I'm confused, but you know what? It does surprise me that you'd hire Jason Garrett, because he hasn't exactly had the most revolutionary or cutting-edge offense, and really NFL offenses have changed a ton in the last 5 years, and it's fair to wonder, like, maybe Jason Garrett has the cutting edge offense that you need in New York for Daniel Jones. But all we know about Jason Garrett as an offensive coordinator is what we remember from when he had Tony Romo in Dallas.
Yeah.
And those were some good times, but the NFL has just changed so much that it definitely makes me concerned. If I was a Giants fan, first of all, you hire a head coach that maybe isn't all that popular, isn't all that well known, isn't all that well respected, because he hasn't had the pelts on the wall that a lot of other guys have had. And then you go and hire an offensive coordinator who's known for clapping and who's known for the things that he did, producing pretty relatively okay, above average, slightly Tony Romo offenses. It makes me a little concerned, because when I'm looking at Daniel Jones, I'm looking at, okay, this guy is one of the quarterbacks of the future. I know he's more of a passing guy, but he can still run the football. So maybe let's bring in some more of these cutting edge, new age offenses. And you bring in Jason Garrett. Not sure I love it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, man. I don't know about this. I don't get the hire. Maybe it was an availability thing. It was late in the game. And I'm surprised, even from Jason Garrett's perspective, like, why jump right back into the game? Take a year off, man. I mean, you've been the Cowboys head coach for 10 years. Your pockets are stupid fat. Take some time. Spend with the family. Find a job next year. I don't think this, you know, this goes bad. This might be the end. You know, I don't know.
Pro Football Focus said that the Cowboys have the number 4 offense in the league this year. Dak Prescott threw for 4,900 yards and 30 touchdowns. And I just still am not sold at all on anyone that worked on that staff.
Yeah, they were pretty stacked offensively. You got to feel like Dak is a pretty good player, but you never felt like we were getting the most out of the Cowboys offense. You felt like they were underachieving, and that's been kind of the thing since the beginning. Maybe it's just because the Cowboys and we have high expectations, but yeah, it seemed like his offenses weren't reaching their potential.
But even still, Jason Garrett was not the offensive coordinator. It was Kellen Moore. And yeah. Mike McCarthy took over in Dallas. He thought enough of the things that Kellen Moore did with their offense that he kept them around. So it's fair to wonder, like, what of the things that we saw from Dallas that were successful this year were even Jason Garrett's brainchild.
Yeah.
All we know about Jason Garrett is like quick little smoke screens and short passes from Tony Romo. So it's fair to wonder, like, there's a lot of unknowns when you hire a coach like that to be your offensive coordinator who hasn't been in that role for a long time.
Last one, guys. 6 years ago, Richard Sherman graced us all with this amazing piece of audio.
In the game, when you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're gonna get. Don't you ever talk about me.
LOB. Am I tripping, or is Richard Sherman's rant following the 2014 NFC title game, is this the best trash talk moment in sports history? Hawk?
Yes, it is the best moment, because it pissed so many people off. And even looking at all the things that we talk about in sports, and that what's big deal and what's not, people got so mad at that. For what? Because a guy thought he was the best and voiced it. And then if you look, again, I'm a big Richard Sherman fan, because anybody who has the balls to come out and say they're the best and put that target on their back and back it up deserves all the credit and all the successes they get, because very rarely does it happen. I'm talking, and I could say a lot of names right now of people who run their mouth and act like they're the best and act like the shit don't stink. And when they put that target on there, people come and see about you. They want to see if you're really what you say you are. That's the best moment for me. Richard Sherman has played in 14 postseason games, has allowed zero touchdowns, and has four interceptions. That's a resume. And only because of what he said back then does that make it the best trash talk ever, because of what he's done after that.
I got to be honest. It's hard for me to remember another rant that was even close, because it was just such a high-profile moment. It was in such a big game. And he backed it up. Like, you can think of other rants that potentially were on that same level as far as boisterous, but nobody has been able to back it up consistently the way Richard Sherman has. And for that, you got to give him the credit as the best rant of all time.
Got to love it, man. All right, well, that's done for Am I Tripping. Before we wrap, let's get an update on the Tomahawk Show Picks contest. John, what are we looking at right now?
Ooh, let's not do that. I don't like that.
No. You sit here and hear your record, and you like it.
Well, we'll start with you guys. Hawk is now 7-10.
Whoop, whoop.
He is in second place, tied for second with a bunch of us. And Joe is 4-10.
A very slick bunch of us thrown in there, as you can see.
I actually am 6-10. I'm tied for third. Saul, Posty Malone, also 7-10. There are four people who went 8-10. Kelly Strange, Wesley James, Corey Easterday, and Brian Lynch. The four of them will be competing for the Tomahawk prize pack grand prize after the Super Bowl.
Wow, that's nice, man. Corey Easterday. All right, I see you, Corey, doing your thing.
Tomahawk VIP.
Yeah, Tomahawk VIP member there. Joe, how do you feel about your record?
We're not going to talk about my record right now. The only thing that I want to talk about...
On a scale from 4-10, how do you feel about your record?
I feel a solid 4 right now.
All right, good.
What I would really like to talk about right now is the greatest Oscar-winning performance that I've ever seen in my entire life. Hawk, I want to know. Give me all the ins and outs of that insane pregame walk-up that you put together with all the different types of players and what they dressed like going into football games.
You know what? I'm glad you like it, Joe. Anytime you like what I put out, I know it's really good. But yeah, so I did the for one of my NFL Twitter shows. I did a sketch of the different kind of NFL players walking into a stadium, and basically
it was like a Key and Peele sketch.
Well, I'm trying to get a reel together to join SNL one day, and I'm just slowly just building my resume up. But in that, I was just trying to think of all the different players. So even when I was recording, I went in with like 8 guys, and as I was sitting there, I would think of other teammates that I'm like, oh, I didn't cover this guy. Oh, I didn't cover that guy. Like, I didn't have a suit guy, and I'm like, I gotta make that funny. How can I do it? Oh, the guy thinks he's too important. And then I made sure I covered, you know, I thought of like the Joel Batonios, and I'm like, oh, okay, I gotta get the guy that doesn't have a stylist, because Joel doesn't have a stylist. You know, Joel doesn't give a shit about that. He's like, I'm coming to play football, bro. You know, so yeah, I thought about all the teammates,
but,
and feel like I covered everyone.
That guy was too well dressed.
Yeah,
that guy was too well dressed. You needed to go with like me, who showed up with sweatpants and the free t-shirt the Browns handed out that says like Brown strength and conditioning. Then you would have nailed it. That was the only miss that of
only
that
miss.
Whole skit.
Which
but
one was your favorite?
That, it was amazing.
What was your favorite of the skit?
Travis Kelce was definitely in my top two. But I also like the guys that dress up in different costumes just for attention. It was like, why are you dressing up in a costume going to the game? I know the Texans, I think it was their linebackers or their D-line, I can't remember exactly who. They did that for a while, and I was like, why are you guys dressing up? Like, yeah, it's getting your attention, and I'm interested. There's no doubt. There's entertaining value for sure. But at the same point, it's like, when you're going to a football game, don't you want the attention to be what you're doing on a football game rather than, you dressed up like Power Rangers, and that was interesting, but you got your ass kicked? Like, that's a bad combo.
Exactly. You spent way too much time thinking about that and not enough time in the game. Any time you devoted to that was time wasted. My favorite personal one was the guy that tries to walk in with the star quarterback.
That was pretty good, because that's so true. Every team's got that guy.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
That was you for a while.
That was me. That was me in the sketch. Everyone had a moment. Like, that was my guy.
Yeah.
I love the Russell. I love the Russell Wilson after. Where did you find
that
wig?
It's weird. I have like 10 wigs in my house just for like random things. When I'll find like a wig, and I'm like, that'd be funny to use one day. I got like a gray hair wig, an afro wig, a dreads wig. It's just weird. So I had it on deck for the Russell. All that stuff was at my house. Good. All the props were already at my house, which is just weird.
You know, the funny thing is I have a pair of those same Fubu shorts that you did during that skit. When I was 12, I was on a AAU basketball team in Milwaukee, and I was one of only two white guys on the team. And, you know, when you're 12, you don't know any different. You're just like, you just assimilate to whatever culture or whatever you're like
your
around the most.
Is, right.
So, yeah, whatever your environment is. And we went to Tennessee for the AAU basketball national championship, and we went to the store, and I was like, you know, not even knowing what I don't know. And I bought like a Yankees baseball jersey and FUBU shorts.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I wore like the whole week, because I was just trying, like, unknowingly trying to assimilate to all the people that were around me. And I wish I would have been with you, Hawks, so you could have told me, like, that's cultural appropriation and you should not be doing that. I don't care if you're 12 years old.
No.
But apparently...
That's not cultural appropriation.
Apparently, you still have your FUBU shorts,
yeah,
unlike me, and you're able to wear them for your skits. So
exactly.
I wish I would still have my shorts.
Well, fashion repeats itself, so eventually we're going to go back to the baggy cargo shorts. And when it happens, I'm going to be the first one with, because I still have it from the previous regime. That's not cultural appropriation. You were very much allowed to wear FUBU shorts. Actually, it was encouraged.
Really?
Yeah. And, I mean, that's a good thing. It was just
news
the name. They wanted everybody to buy their shit. Trust me, anybody who's selling something doesn't have a specific person they want to buy. That's just good old capitalism.
Just,
all right.
Just ask Michael Jordan. Remember
exactly.
the famous quote about the Nikes?
Republicans buy sneakers too.
Wear Nikes too.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, that does it for this episode of the Tomahawk Show. We are off next week because Joe will be still drunk from the Tomahawk drinking game in Mexico. We'll be back the following week. 3 episodes, 4 Super Bowl. Gear up, because we're going to have more guests than you can imagine. It's going to be incredible. And you might just be able to catch Tomahawk on your television screen. Joe, final thoughts, brother. What are they?
Dude, final thoughts. I don't even know what to say other than like the excitement around the Super Bowl. I can't remember the last Super Bowl I was this excited, because there's always a little bit of fear that the Patriots are going to win another Super Bowl and ruin your fucking Sundays. And that's what happened last year. And I'm so happy that I don't have to watch Bill and Tom and those Patriots on this Sunday. So I want to be sitting in my seats in Hard Rock Stadium. I think that's the name of it. And I'm going to be able to watch Kyle Shanahan drink and myself drink and my wife drink and everybody that I love, all these former Cleveland Browns out there running around working as I watch. And somebody's going to win a Super Bowl, and it's going to be a glorious week. I cannot wait.
All right, man. I feel like I have to go, especially since, you know, Kyle, Mike, Kwan, Mostert, Cam Irving, Mitchell Schwartz, and all the other Browns are going to be there. You're right. Our friends are there. I'll think about it. All right, that does it for this episode. Take us out with a Joe Hawk yourself, Joe, a Mexico style. Actually, don't give us a Mexico style. I don't want to offend anybody. Just give us the good old-fashioned Joe Hawk yourself.
Jose Hawky Solamente.
That is, I don't know what that is. Joe Hawk yourself, or whatever that was.